Bibles, if you will, and turn to John's Gospel, chapter 11. I'll begin by reading a portion of one verse, verse 39. Appreciate the good singing tonight. Ministered to our hearts. Prayers and testimonies. We make it through this hot weather. Anybody else got hot? I didn't know how to tell the weather until I moved to Alabama. They taught me how. They said, preacher, when you get done building your house, just get you a flat rock and put it right out the front door. If you go outside in the morning, it's wet. It's probably raining. He says, if you walk out there and put your hand on it and it's hot, it's probably going to be sunshine. He said, if you walk out there and the rock's gone, run, hide. It's a tornado. So that's held pretty true. But I guess we'll just put up with what the Lord sends our way, won't we? John chapter number 11, verse 39, Jesus said, take ye away the stone. I want to preach tonight on this matter of the goings and comings of the work of Christ and what to expect. If Jesus shows up anywhere, he's not just passing the time. He's not just killing time. There'll be a work that he wants to do. And there'll be a work that is needed to be done. But what are we to expect in the workings of Christ? Well, let's notice how that he comes to this place. We'll look back in verse 1. The goings and comings, the went and came. It's the truth of all of our lives, from dust to dust, the movements. Moses went and came, David went and came, the children of Israel went and came. Jesus himself came down from heaven and went back to heaven. But we notice while he's here on this earth, he is going and coming like the rest of us. But in that going and coming, he is doing a work. Look at verse 1. Now a certain man was sick named Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was that Mary that anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. Verse number 6, when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. Then after that, saith he to his disciples, let us go into Judea again. He's on the move. Verse 11, these things said he, and after that he saith to them, our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go, that I may awake him out of sleep. Verse number 15, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Verse number 28. And when she had so said, she went her way and called Mary her sister secretly, saying, the Master is come and calleth for thee. Verse 32. And when Mary was come where Jesus was, and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying unto him, Lord, if thou hadst been here, my brother had not died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled, and said, where have ye laid him? And they said unto him, Lord, come and see. And then we come to our verse 39. Jesus said, take ye away the stone. Martha, the sister of him that was dead, saith unto him, Lord, by this time he stinketh, for he hath been dead for 4 days. Jesus saith unto her, said I not unto thee that if thou wouldest believe, thou shouldest see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead was laid. Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me, and I knew that thou hearest me always. But because of the people which stand by, I said it, that they may believe that thou hast sent me. And when he had thus spoken, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth bound head and foot with grave clothes, and his face was bound with a napkin. Jesus saith unto them, loose him and let him go. I'm thinking about the goings and comings of Christ amidst his divine workings and what we are to expect. They are calling on him. They want him to come urgently. They want him to come miraculously. They want him to come and do a work totally. They're waiting on him. But isn't that true with you and I? So often we cry out unto him. And we say and do, we're waiting on him. Because we realize that the work that we need done, only he can do. But in the midst of his work, I'm preaching on work expectations. In the midst of his work, what are we supposed to expect? When we're wanting a miracle like none other, the raising of a man from the dead, and we're wanting him to make his way there to do this work, what are we to expect when he gets there? I want to give you 4 or 5 thoughts concerning this matter of work expectations. I would say to you, first of all, found in verse number 39, take ye away the stone. Expect, underscore this, expect that if you want God to do something, he may want you to do something first. It is here, no doubt, that they are astonished that they're going to be involved in the work that he's going to do. But that's not unlike the Lord. As a matter of fact, every work he ever did had a human aspect to it. Through his own physical and the workings of God. But God never works alone. If he is going to split the Red Sea, Moses is going to have to raise the rod. If he's going to send down the rain, Elijah's going to have to do some praying. If he's going to turn the water into wine, somebody's going to have to fill the water pots. If the walls of Jericho are going to come down, they're going to have to walk around it. And the truth of the matter is, there is much that God may want to do. But the hindrance could be, is we're not willing to do what He wants us to do first. What God does for eternity will certainly take up some of your time. What God does that is miraculous will involve the mundane and ordinary everyday lives. Stones are everywhere, holding in darkness and lifelessness and sinfulness and hopelessness. And someone will have to move the stone first. Take ye the stone away. So many times we're involved in prayer saying, oh Lord, would you do something? And sometimes we feel like He's not doing anything, but the reason He's not doing anything sometimes is because we haven't done what He's asked us to do. So that our prayer might ought to be in the midst of the great work we want Him to do and need Him to do is, first of all, Lord, let me get this out of the way. What do you want me to do in the midst of what you're doing? And I promise you, you'll have a part in it. Oh yes, if He can raise Lazarus from the dead, He can move a stone, but He's not going to move the stone. He's not going to raise the rod. He's not going to fill the water pot with water. He's not going to march around the walls. That is the part of those that are there. That'll be something simple, something natural, something that is of your abilities that He's given you that He will want you to do first. Should it not be our prayer, Lord, what is it you're telling me to do before I ask you to do what I want done? Expect that if you want God to do something, He may ask you to do something first and then last. Take the stone away and then loose him and let him go. Work expectations and the goings and comings of Christ. What is it He's asking you to do that would open the door for what He is willing to do? The second thing that I would emphasize is expect that if God comes to you and has something that He wants you to do, if He comes to you and asks you to do something, it's because He has something much greater that He wants to do. The joys of being commissioned by God in His eternal workings is to understand that what He asks you to do will be minute and small compared to what He's fixing to do. All I'm asking you to do is to take the stone out of the way. Push it, shove it, pull it, leverage it. Get two or three or four or five of you forever, how long it takes. All I'm telling you is, however you want to do it, I don't care. Get the stone out of the way. Because if you get the stone out of the way, then I will show you what I can do. Move the stone and He can raise the the dead. Almost 25 years ago, at the end of pastoring for 22 years, that tells my age, I was wrestling with this thing of evangelism. I never wanted to be an evangelist. I had no aspiration of being an evangelist. I had no ladder that I wanted to climb. Just leave me alone. I'll just pastor this church until I die. That was my hope, my prayer. And that's what I told the people. I'll be here till I die. But the Lord came to me in one of those words, sort of like that, and simply said to me, "You're done here. I've got something more I want to do." And I told him, I can remember. I just basically told him, "No, I don't recommend that." Didn't work out too good. 2 years of total misery. I happened to be preaching through the life of Abraham, a man of faith, who left and went. And here God was telling me every sermon I preached, "This is not where I want that sermon." And the thing that eat away at me like a cancer is I would go to bed at night, in the stillness of the night, the Lord would say, "You're not seeing what I want to show you. This ain't the half of it. You don't want to miss it. Do what I tell you to do, and I'll show you what I can do." And in the misery of the night, it brought me to the place of surrender, saying, "God, I want to experience the fullness of what you have for my life, whatever it takes. And if you want me to roll the stone away, I'll roll the stone away, because I want to see the life-giving work that you can do and that you only can do." Expect that if you want him to do something, he may involve you in it first. Expect, though, and rejoice that if he asks you to do something, he's got something he's coming behind that he's going to do. And sometimes you can pretty well guess what it is. If you move a stone, you can pretty well guess what he's fixing to do. Oh, in the goings and comings of Christ, as he moves in our direction and as he comes prepared to work, the expectation of it. He's going to involve you. But after he does, he's fixing to do something wonderful. The third thing I would say to you in this matter of expectation, expect that the something he asks you to do will be all of the something you'll need to do in that matter. I pondered this. He's bringing them into a divine work, though they're doing the human side. You do what I want you to do, and I'll do what you can't do. You get the stone out of the way, I'll raise the dead. That's just the way God does it. And if you will do that, you'll be able to witness what I can do. Truth of the matter is, if they don't take that stone out of the way, if they don't move that stone, and I'm like the old mountain fella, I can't explain this. But it could be poor Lazarus would still be laying in that grave. I don't know. But I'm going to tell you something. We don't have to worry about that, because they did take the stone out of the way. But I don't want to spend my life wondering if God has accomplished all he wanted to accomplish in my life, or have I been the one who has refused to participate in the work that he wants done by moving the stones. As I began to say a while ago, how many lives, this world is filled with people who are behind the stones of darkness and lifelessness and no light, and all it's going to take is for you to let God use you to do the something he wants you to do, so he can bring light and life where there is none. Moving that stone out of the way. I'm talking about work expectations. But expect Expect now that the something he asks you to do will be all of the something that you will need to do in this matter. Now, I pondered this because I realized that there's more than one stone, no doubt. I mean, graves in that day buried in the tombs with stones over them. And this thing could get out of hand. They could get religiously excited. And they move one stone and then they want to become missionaries, start moving stones. But this is not, it takes a word to move a stone. You don't just go out and say, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, I'm going to move a stone and let us go. There's a word for the very, God is very precise in the word he, work he wants us to do. Move that, this is the stone that he wants moved. Now whatever it takes to get that stone, no detail on that, you got the liberty, just start pushing. Pulling, prying, whatever you got to do. Get it out of the way. But once you have moved the stone, what you need to do is get out of the way. Because what happens beyond moving the stone has nothing to do with you nor me. Don't get real spiritual in the work of the Lord and step across the boundary if somehow you've got this life-giving ability within yourself to do something that God alone can do. Don't run in there and start fanning him in the face and blowing in his up his nostrils and giving him artificial respiration and grab his heels, start pulling him out. He's not going to live. He's not going to breathe. His heart's not going to start beating until the Lord says, Lazarus, come forth. And I'm going to tell you something. As a man of God, a preacher of the gospel, I've had to learn that. I've had to learn that in the work of the Lord. I'm glad he saved me. I'm glad he called me to preach. I'm glad he put me into evangelism. I'm glad he sent me out to move a few stones through his word. But honey, what I have to realize is when I'm done with this sermon, I'm done. I can come and preach. I can come and pray. I can come and testify. You can come and give. You can be faithful. You can forgive. You can love folks. You can do whatever that stone is in the way. You can push it out of the way. But God has to give the life. And the worst thing you can do is make a monument out of that stone. Put a little plaque on it and put everybody's name on it that rolled the stone away. We don't know who wrote, but that's not important. The fact is, somebody was obedient and it is gone. Amen. And don't start a roll or a stone rolling ministry. I'm going to go out and get support. I'm going to go out here and I'm going to move every stone in this graveyard. If you do, you're going to leave a lot of stink. Because it's going to take the Lord to bring them out of there. And he ain't bringing them out unless he told you to move the stone. Boy, I'm going to tell you, this is so sensitive to the Spirit and the Holy Ghost and the working of God. Of which, and I say this to young preachers, please, please don't just go take a church. You better hear God's voice in doing that. I say that to young lady. Please don't just marry a young woman. You need a voice for that. You need a word so that you'll know that you're doing what he's told you to do and then get out of the way. I'm going to tell you the problem with religion is it's too religious. We're too active. He don't want us doing all of that. Go into some of these churches. They're so programized. They've got a plan for everything, for every day, for every hour, for every weekend, for everything. And they think they're doing something for God. They're getting in the way. The simplicity of it is, all I want you to do is move the stone. And that'll be it for right now. Work expectations. Did we know that he was going to involve us? But involving us He comes behind that and does the great work that he's let us be a part of, moving that stone, but then getting out of the way and letting him do his work. I'm talking about this matter of work expectation. Move on to my next thought. In this matter of the movings and goings and comings of Christ and his works, what are we to expect? I would say to you to expect that stone that was rolled away or moved from Lazarus' tomb that let in the light and the life has never stopped moving. It has kept on rolling. Now, what I mean is in its impact and in its influence and how God used it. Little did those men know who moved that stone away that 2,000 years ago there'd be a preacher right here tonight that was preaching on rolling or moving the stone away. And it's through the moving and rolling of that stone away that Christ is magnified, and we see that he himself is the resurrection and the life. And how many sinners have sat and heard John 11 preach and realized that truth and realized they were in darkness and had no life and came to Christ, and it seemed like the stone was rolled away again. It just kept on moving. And I could illustrate that with everyone that is here tonight. How many of you here this evening would say, I do have light and I do have life. I have Christ. Raise your hand. Well, let me say this to you, that if you have light and life, for sure God used somebody to roll your stone away. Somebody witnessed to you. Somebody prayed for you. Somebody loved you. Somebody forgave you. Somebody invited you to church. Somebody was used by God in all of our lives to roll our stone away. And aren't you thankful for those who rolled the stone? And somebody said, well, how long does it take to get that? I don't know, and don't say, as long as it takes. Just keep pushing. Just keep praying. Just keep seeking the Lord. Just stay faithful and doing what he wants you to do. And keep doing what he tells you to do to get that stone out of the way. And the thing about it is, it's still rolling down through this day and age because I'm preaching on it right now. A couple of illustrations of that. I was preaching in Alabama, a little church. Service was over. I was standing in the back, and there's an elderly, I call him elderly, don't seem as old now as it used to be, but he was standing there in the back, and I was just small talking, asking him. He was from around there, and he was. And I said, you been a part of this church a long time? He said, well, no, sir. He was 80 years old, and he said, I didn't get saved until I was 69. I said, really? He said, yeah. And so he began, proceeded to tell me about his salvation experience. Now, of course, I love to hear him. He said, I had retired from work, and he said, I got into antiques, buying antiques, selling antiques, swapping antiques, and said it became my passion, antiques. And he said, one day I was driving out this road, and I happened to look up, because he said I was always observing, seeing, there's any antiques around. He said, I saw what I'd been looking for quite some time. He said, a man had two wagon wheels, one on one side of his driveway and one on the other, and they were antique, just like I'd been looking for. He said, I pulled up in there and told my wife, I'm going to stop, talk to this guy about these antiques, see where he got them or whatever. And so he stopped, and they got out and did know the guy, small talking to one another. And he said to him, sir, he said, the reason why I stopped, he said, I was looking at these wagon wheels. And he said, I've been looking for some to buy them. And I just wondered, would you like to sell those wagon wheels? He said, well, no, sir. Said, I like them, and said, I hadn't ever thought. But he said, now, wait a minute. He said, you go to church anywhere? He said, no, sir, I don't. I'm not a religious man. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm talking about how that stone just keeps rolling. He said, if you come to my church Sunday morning, told him where he's at, and it was the church I was talking to him in. If you come Sunday morning, I will give you these two wagons. I'll dig them up and you can have them. He said, what? He said, yeah, you come to church Sunday morning, I'll give it. He said, I didn't know what to say to him. I just stuttered and stammered. Got in my car, pulled out. Said, my wife said, well, did he want to sell them? He said, no, he wants to give them to me. She said, why? He said, but he wants me to go to church. She said, well, you've been a pagan your whole life anyhow. It won't hurt to go to church one time. He said, when she said that, I drove on a little ways, and I said, well, I'm going to go back and talk to him again about that. And said, I pulled up, and he's still out in the yard. And I said, sir, are you serious you're going to give me these wagon wheels if I come? He said, you show up Sunday morning, you come back by here, you got the wheels. He said, I got ready that Sunday morning to go to church. Last place on earth I wanted to go. And he said, my intent was to go in and sit on the back. And that's where he said, he pointed out, he said, I sat right here. Said, I was going to get through that service the best thing I could. I was going to get out there and go get my wagon wheels. But he said, right in the middle of that sermon, he said, here come the Lord into me and convicted my heart. He was preaching the gospel. He said, I couldn't wait for him to get done. Said, I jumped up. I ran down to the altar and got saved. And he said, when I got up, I didn't know it. My wife was on the other side and she got saved. Well, we know how much a soul is worth. More than the whole world put together. Is that right? So, here a man is willing to give two antique wagon wheels for two priceless souls. I think that's a pretty good deal. Two old sinners coming to Christ, going to be in heaven for eternity. But that wasn't the stop of it. He said, now, preacher, right after I got saved, he said there was a missionary come through here, and they asked if our church, if somebody would be over putting together the Gospels of John to be sent around the world. And said, I felt like, man, since I got saved, I wanted everybody to hear what I heard, so I said, yeah, I'll be over it. Now, he was 69 when he got saved. He was 80 when I talked to him. And he said, preacher, since we started that, he said, it's been 11 years. And he said, we've sent out over 1 million Gospels of John. I said, hallelujah, two wagon wheels. And two sinners got saved. And one of them, him and his wife, orchestrated in the church and sent out over 1 million Gospels of John. Now, I'm not going to suppose 1 million people got saved, but the possibility is, I'm sure some of them read that word, and the same word that spoke to his heart spoke to their heart. And eternity's only going to reveal what came out of two wagon wheels. And the captain's sack, I don't even know if he got them. He never said another word about the wagon wheels. I doubt he ever even went back for them. He found what he wanted. It kept on rolling to this day. Oh, the works of God that he allows us to be a part of are eternal works. When I finish preaching this sermon, understand it ain't done. His word does not return unto him void, but it does return unto him. It just keeps on moving. Pushing the stone away that'll never stop moving. Another thought I had of that, my wife, of course, as you know, sings and plays the piano all across the country, everywhere we go. And when she was 7, 8 years old, she started sitting down just hitting a note at a time, at the key at a time, at the piano. She had a sister much older than her. She was the youngest, and she had sisters. Her older sister was 20-some years. Well, Mary was 21 or 2 years older than her. Mary would come home on the weekends. And she told little Esther now, 7, 8 years old, she said, honey, every song you learn during the week, when I come home, I'm going to give you a quarter for that song. So she sat down and began to learn songs. So that when her sister came home, she got a quarter. Now think about this. For each song. I think that's a pretty good deal for the church, don't you? To have somebody pay a quarter so somebody could learn a song to play for the church. Oh, you'd have a dollar and get four songs, four full songs for a dollar. $10 would get you, 40 songs? You can't beat a deal like that. And she sat down and week after week after week after week for a quarter a song. And here we have, since in evangelism 25 years, but we did evangelism out of the church for many years. Here we have went across the country, some 60, 70 churches every year. And she goes to that piano and pulls out a 25-cent song that God uses to touch somebody's heart. Most of the time, if there is an invitation, she's the one that plays it. Somebody said, why? I said, because I preach a lot of duds and I need somebody to pull it out. But she'll come and inevitably pull out one of those 25. I said, oh, Lord, I wish Mary is here. I hadn't thought about it when she was alive. I'd love to hug her now and say, Mary, I thank you for the 25-cent songs because they're still being sung. Hearts and souls being stirred. 25 cents. If you'll just get it moving, if you'll just get it started, if you'll get it pushed out of the way, God can take care and do an eternal work that'll never stop moving. I'm talking about the work expectations. When Christ shows up, what are we to expect? Oh, expect that if you want Him to do something, He may want you to do something first. Expect that if He does, after you've done something, He's got something greater He wants to do. Expect that the something He asks you to do is all the something that you'll need to do. But expect the something He asks you to do will never stop doing something. And then can I say to you, expect that if you and God are on the same page about the same thing, hell nor high water can stop it. Abraham wanted an Isaac, and Sarah did. But who wanted an Isaac even more than they did? Hannah wanted a Samuel. But who wanted a Samuel more than she did? Elijah wanted rain from heaven, but who wanted to send rain more than he wanted it? God did. They wanted Lazarus alive. He wanted Lazarus alive more than they did. And there it comes. Just expect that if you get on the same page and do what He tells you to do, so He'll do what He's supposed to do, hell nor high water can stop it. It'll bring it to pass. I thought about Brother McIntosh testifying this morning, Brother Chance testifying this evening, and here's the gentleman that God did the work on. But that work now, I'm not going into the realms of God's, what He might do if things don't happen the way we think they ought to, but what I'm saying to you is that God used these two men to bring this man here tonight. God used Brother McIntosh in spite of all of the forces against it to go in and pray over that dear lady, as He said this morning, and she's yet alive. But all it took was a simple prayer. All it took was a visit and trusting God and doing what He told you to do. And then all of a sudden, here comes what only He could do. And you think about Brother McIntosh being here. It is because your pastor's been pushing on them stones over that cell, over that jail, that prison for all of these years. Doing his part of just simply going out there to open the book and using in that human voice with the divine purpose coming out of him to give them the word. And then God moved the stone and there came light and there came life out of it. So just a little something. Just a little something. Oh, it may seem big when he says, now you're going to have to forgive them. It may seem big when he said, now the stone that's covering this darkness here is your heart. You're going to have to love somebody. Oh, if we could just do what he wants us to do. I can't tell you what that is. But you'll be able to do it. He'll give you the strength to do it. There won't be no miracle to it. What they did was not a miracle. What they did was obedience so he could do the miracle. What he asked you to do, what he's asking me to do right now, anybody can do in the physical sense, just get up and holler and scream and spit on people. Anybody can do that in the human sense. But if I'll do that, he'll do the divine work. He'll do the divine work. And I would bring you back to this thought. So many times we're so busy asking him to do something. And a lot of times it's the same thing. We're asking him to do. When we ought to just pull over and park for a while and say, Lord, let me change this prayer. What is it you want me to do so you can do what you want to do? And when you do that, and that stone dissipates and moves out of the way, honey, you're going to see a divine miracle. It was just that simple. Take ye the stone away. Work expectations. The Lord moves, he comes, he goes. But what are we to expect? I guess the summary of it is he's going to say to you, all right, is that what you want me to do? Here's what I want you to do. Let's bow our heads.